Versus Universe.
Good evening and welcome everybody to Paranexus Universe. Today is Wednesday, April 15th, 2011. My name is Doug Kelly and I'm here with Grant Rubendunks.
Hey Doug, welcome everybody.
Tonight is show episode number 155 and we have Ron Slusher with us tonight. We're going to be talking about the Mayan Book of the People and the Native American Paranormal Connection. And Ron has done a lot of research in this particular area in the Mayans and the Book of the People, like their Bible, and of course Native American lore and tales and beliefs and so forth. So we'll get to that in just a second, but as always, we welcome everybody to the chat room who is in the chat room live listening tonight, and we encourage you to ask questions or to give us a call, and we can address those. We also welcome our listeners on the Inception Radio Network. So, without any further ado, Ron Slusher, welcome to the program.
How you doing, Doug?
Hey, Ron, welcome.
Hi, Grant.
Good to have you. So, let's just start with this whole concept, because what you do is kind of interesting. You know, tell us about yourself and how you got into this kind of research.
It's really a long story, but I just happened to find a stone. And if you went to Jamie, can throw my blog address up there. But I happened to find a stone while I was doing electrical work for Barry Goldwater, the infamous Barry Goldwater that went for president. I guess it had been back in the 70s, huh, 60s or 70s. And it led me to the Hopis of northern Arizona. That's a long, long story. But one thing led to another. And what had happened was I had found this stone. I turned down $1 million for it. And that's a little bit of a story in itself. But anyway, I ended up turning down $1 million for it, and which just kind of triggered some things. And so I happened to be in a bookstore one day, and I found what was called the Book of the Hopi. And to be truthful with you, even though I grew up here in Arizona, I didn't know anything about the Hopi Indians. And I picked up the book, started reading about it, and I knew about Barry Goldwater and the Hopi Indians because Barry Goldwater believed in the alien connection very much. And Barry had found out, because he spent a lot of time on the reservation, that the Hopi and the alien connection is like hand in hand.
Really?
And so what Barry was trying to do, well, Barry went up there and started trying to learn the dances. You know, because the Hopi sacred dances, a lot of them are still into the public. In fact, in June, I'll be up again to listen to the dances. You can't record them or nothing like that. And they go back thousands of years. And the way they handed down their history was through their dances. So, because they didn't have a written history, you know, or a numerical system or something like that. So I went up there, and what I did is I just took a picture of the stone on a Polaroid. I'll go back to Barry. So, and I knew about the Barry connection, and I found this stone, and it didn't belong where it belonged. And I thought maybe it belonged to the Hopis, and Barry maybe thought something. He was dying of cancer at the end, and maybe it got throttled. I don't know, but the connection happened. So anyway, I took a picture of the stone, and I went up to the Hopi Reservation. And I started at Walpi, and they basically live on three mesas up there. I just started on Walpi, which is on the very far end. And I go to the villages and say, you know, to the plazas. And it was a weekend, so you'd have all your artists out there selling their kachinas, their potteries, their blankets, their weavings, you know what I mean, all the things the Hopis are famous for. And I walk around with my photo and just go, is this mean anything to you? And no, don't mean nothing to us, bud. And we'd pack up and go to another village, and this went on and on. And then finally, our last stop would have been on the third mesa on a community called Old Araby. Now, a little information for everybody. Old Araby is the oldest continuous lived-on community in North America. A lot of people think it's the place in New Mexico, but it's really Old Araby when it comes to the Native Americans. And that Old Araby sits right in the middle of the Hopi Reservation. In fact, to the Hopi and the Navajo, and probably to all the Southwest Indians I discovered, will that would basically be their Jerusalem.
Hmm.
where, because a lot of it's become proven more and more that the Hopi were probably the first inhabitants or first Native Americans, and then the rest of the tribes, all transitions are just spring off of the Hopi thing. You get what I'm saying? They would have a Hopi story, but it'd have a little twist to it. But it'd be the same basic story. So anyway, I walk into Old Arrivee. There's two guys carving kachinas. Later on, became good friends. In fact, in a month from now, I'll be up on Old Arrivee visiting my friends again. And I showed them the picture of the stone. They just said, come back in 3 hours.
Hmm.
And so, and I have no clue. And tell you a little thing about Old Arrivee. Old Arrivee is where the traditionalists live, the Hopi traditionalists. And when you hear all this stuff about the Hopis, you know what I mean, that's so popular now, that's because it's all based on the clans from Old Arrivee. So, like I said, it's like the Jerusalem. So, anyway, come back in three. They get a big smile on the face. They say, well, come back in 3 hours. Well, I come back in 3 hours. And they go, well, we want to show you something. So what we did was they took me out to the petroglyphs that face south. And Jamie put my blog spot up there. And at the bottom of my blog where the pictures are, you'll see some pictures from Old Arrivee of the petroglyphs and stuff like that. In fact, you'll see the Tree of Life. And if you'll notice at the bottom of the Tree of the Life, you'll see like alien-type stick figures on the bottom there.
Mm-hmm.
You'll see a Mayan character there. You can tell by the ring in the ear and the nose. And then, of course, it's really, really old, but you still see where the feathered plume was on the top, like the Quetzalcoatl connection, the plume serpent. So anyway, they came back, and they take me out the petroglyphs. And petroglyphs read like a book. You would start at the top and go down, you know, like reading a computer or a newspaper, right? And at the very top would be the oldest history. Well, they go and they point out to me, they go, well, there's your stone. When in actuality, I thought they were going to say, there's our stone. But they had a petroglyph of the stone. And then after that, well, they just took me around the mesas. And I went up there with another guy. I didn't want to go up there with another guy. I just kind of got conned into it. I'm a little famous here. And everybody knew I was sitting on the stone. And, oh, not everybody, but I mean all the people in my life knew I was sitting on the stone. They all knew I turned down $1 million for it because they all thought I was nuts. And,
We won't go there.
Yeah. Well, it's just that, you know, most people live in the material world. You know what I mean? And it would have took the money and run. So anyway, we walked around the mesas. They let me see all the petroglyphs. Probably one of the very, very first white men to ever see it. And this was about 13 years ago, long before the Hopi became kind of infamous like they are now. And took me around, showed me all the petroglyphs. Then they took me around a tour. We walked around the mesa, went up to where there was a burned-out footing of a church. Well, when the Christians came, we all know what the Spaniards did to the Native Americans. They enslaved them and tried to enslave them. And in a lot of cases, they did. And that's another story. But what happened, they took me where the church was, and by fate, the day that they got they made them build them a church at gunpoint, and that night they got struck by lightning and burned to the ground.
Could you repeat that last part once?
What was that now?
Who build a church by gunpoint?
The Spaniards had made them.
Gotcha.
Okay.
Okay. That little part.
The Spaniards, because they were the first. This was in the mid 1500s. I just blogged about this again, but in the mid 1500s, and so because they tried to enslave them, and it got struck down with lightning, and this is in all kinds of Hopi history books. But anyway, I got fortunate enough to get to see it where it actually was. Anyway, we go back, and then they go to me, and it was really interesting. This is all going on in about 4 or 5 hours' time. And they looked at me and says, well, you can come live with us, and your friend can never come back. And so the rest is kind of history. Then I kind of got hooked in with the Hopis, and I've been going up there for the last 15 years or so.
That's interesting. So tell us about this stone. I mean,
If you look on my blog address, you'll see it's a round, flat stone. And what I did was I put it on a picture book, you know, a book of the Hopi.
Mm-hmm.
A Hopi picture book, and I just laid it flat on there. And interesting, when I found the stone, now what happened was I found the stone. And by fate, a lot of things had to go together here because by fate, my parents, as a kid growing up, we owned a gym and rock store, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I grew up around that. I'm an old rock hunter, and especially here in Arizona. We're just one of the best rock hunting places in the country, if not the world. And that's because we're volcanic.
Mm-hmm.
You gotta have heat. Get my point?
That's right. To get make all those minerals.
There you go. There you go, Grant. Right there.
Yeah.
Right. And so we're a rock hunting. We're just rock hunting. So anyway, I grew up in that. So what happened was, one day, and we have a lot of, in the wintertime, and we have the snowboards here, and they're going on right now. We have a lot of rock and gym shows or outdoors. And instead of buying your kid a piece of plastic crap, well, people out here might go buy your kid a geode. Get my point? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Or a nice piece of chrysocolla or a stone or something, because that's going to last forever. And then we went to a gym show, and there happened to be these guys. And the guy is famous, and he's been on the History Channel and all that. He's called the Meteor Hunter guy. I forget his name.
Yeah, I've seen it.
Yeah, okay, I'm sure you have.
Well, we kind of became friends. What happened was I walked in, and I was at this gym show, and it was out in It was west of Phoenix, and it's still going on out there on Cotton Lane. And he had to be selling meteors, and I walked up to him jokingly and said, I thought it was against the law to sell meteors, which technically it is, and I'll explain that in a minute. But anyway, he laughed at me and said, so is it to have pot. You know what I mean? It's just typical America law.
So what's the significance of the rock?
We're getting to the fact that I'm trying to explain how we found the significance of the rock.
Okay.
So I started to talk to him, really a smart guy. He's probably only in his mid-40s now. And in fact, he's the one who goes around on this big dune buggy looking thing because they drag magnets now trying to find meteors, you know. So anyway, we get to talk, and I describe to him what I found. And if you see in the picture, it's real flat and it's round and there's little circles in there. And he just starts and he goes, it's a Sunday afternoon. And he goes, I tell you what, bud. He goes, where'd you find it? And I says, I don't know if I want to tell you what I found. And then I told him what I found. Anyway, we start talking. And he goes, I tell you what, I'll go get $10,000 cash. You go get the stone. We'll meet you back here and I'll buy it from you. And that's the story in itself. And I says, I don't want to sell the stone. I was on my coffee table, and it was kind of like if you came over to my place and sat down, it was kind of like you got one of these. You know, so it's such a novelty, the shape of it, right? And you could tell it was meteor type material. You can tell. And just for everybody's information out there, not all meteors are magnetic, by the way. So anyway, I turned down the $10,000 right there in the spot. Well, what happened? He kept following me around. And finally, he says, here, I'll get you $1 million for the stone, and I just want my commission. And I said, I don't want to do it. He says, if you change your mind, here's my card and call me.
Mm-hmm.
So that led me to looking for the Hopi connection with the stone. So what it is, now to get back to you guys to show where this all goes. Now, in Hopi legend, they're waiting for their white brother from the east with long blonde hair bearing a sign of the sun, okay?
Huh.
When you look at the petroglyph and you look at the stone, that could represent the sun, okay, the roundishness.
Mm-hmm.
And I had long blonde hair. I wasn't in my 60s then, but I am now. I was still in my early 50s. And I came in from the east. Now, I could have came in from three other directions, but I came in from the east. And so I think that that's what the connection was. And they took me in, and it kind of worked out that way. And I've been whenever I meet the Hopis, I'm always welcome. In fact, this summer I will post on my blog, and I'll do a video on it. I'm going to be taken back into a canyon by a young friend of mine, and I got his video posted on my YouTube videos there.
Well, the Hopi are a very spiritual people, are they not?
I mean, there's only 6,000.
And they've been that way forever. And they have their own philosophy about how the world started and the creation and the end of the world and everything as well, don't they?
Yeah, well, we're living in the fourth world.
Right.
And oh yeah, you're exactly. And what they picked, what you're talking about, they picked up in me.
Uh huh.
Get my point? And I just was.
So, are you saying that there was a prophecy?
Yeah, there was a the Hopi prophecy is at the end times, our white brother from the east will arrive with long blonde hair, bearing a sign of the sun.
And you had the petroglyph,
and I walk in.
Yeah.
Yeah, interesting.
And what's interesting about it is when this happened, what happened was they said come back in 3 hours, okay?
Uh-huh.
Well, the two Kachina carvers now would have had to gone to the chief of Old Arabi, because they were going to take this white honky and take him out and show him all these petroglyphs that no other white man has seen. Get my point?
Mm. Oh, absolutely, sure.
Yeah, and then 4 or 5 years later, they asked me to photograph them. That was really interesting in itself, but if we get time, I'll explain to you why that happened. But so when they said, we'll come back in 3 hours, well, they had to go talk to the chief of Old Arabi, right? In fact, one of the two guys, there's a picture there, and you see the taller guy, the four of us together, that's Patrick Lanza. Now, his great-great-grandfather was a chief of Old Arabi.
Now, other than their dance, do they keep any oral history, or do they do...
Oh, yeah, total oral history. You betcha.
So
that's coupled with a dance, so you got this whole culture where they preserve their history through dance and...
There you go. Because when we were kids and they try to teach us stuff, they would teach us to them in rhymes. Get my point?
Of course, sure.
And then you would remember that.
Mm-hmm.
It's really no different.
Ring around the rosy.
And so their dances were the same way.
Mm-hmm.
But what's really kind of neat about their dances now, they'll incorporate how history changes. In fact, one of the most beautiful things I ever saw in my life was my very first dance. And they have a chant that they have their own special chant. You can't duplicate it. And I've heard people call it throat singing or something. But it's the most incredible make your arms goosebump chant. And when they do their dances, they go from sun up to sundown. And they dance the whole time.
So they get like into a trance doing that too.
There you go. There you go. There you go.
They only lead them in that, do they?
Yeah. And then what will happen is you might have 100 dancers, and then they have other people that interlude into the. And if you go on YouTube or anything, you can't find those sacred dances. Because they have people patrolling to make sure you don't record anything.
Yeah, well, that's probably a good thing. I like that. I admire that. So just for the sake of people like myself who not are all that familiar about the stages in the Hopi prophecy, and where are we at right now, according to them?
Well, this is it. I was just last summer, I was up there, and I was leaning up against one of the kivas, and one of them, sounds like he's about your age, Grant, and probably in his late 20s, right? That's how you sound to me anyway.
How old?
He was in his late 20s.
Oh, no. I'm deeply flattered. I'm 60, going to be 61.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Well, you've never smoked.
But you and I are contemporaries.
Huh?
Quite the contrary, of course I have.
God, I always thought you were young.
Cigars, tobacco.
He's young at heart.
Yeah.
Oh, he's young at heart. Well, guys, that's such a... Okay, well, the hell with that idea. So anyway, I'm leaning up this
right,
up against so, Kiva, and me and this one. I'm talking to a friend of mine, and he goes, "Well, you know, all of our prophecies have come true." And I go, "I know, man." I said, "That's why I've been coming up here lately." Because here's a Hopi prophecy: is that the people that are supposed to be saved will find their way back to the Hopi reservation.
Oh, okay. Kind of like The Stand, where everybody finds their way to the lady.
Yeah, and you know what's interesting? If I had this dream ever since a child of being on this hill, and there was these crafts coming down, like to save the people.
Mm-hmm.
Very close to the rapture. Basically, it's a rapture in the Bible. But I hear that there's no such thing as a rapture in the Bible, as it turns out.
Well, that's the truth. That is the truth. It was done by the dispensationalists. So it wasn't done in the 1840s, so it's not any part of the Bible.
Yeah, it's not any part of the Bible. But the Hopis have already had three different raptures. The only difference with their raptures is the ant people take them underground.
Uh-huh.
What does that
and
mean?
I bounce this off a lot of my Hopi friends, too, and they kind of all agree with me. And I equate the ant people to the Greys.
Hmm.
Well, that would make sense.
Yeah, well, it just makes sense. And the reason the Hopi call them the ant people is, and if you look at a Grey, he has a skinny waist like an ant, right?
Yeah, they're
insectoid.
He's got
a big head like an ant, right? He's got long arms and legs like an ant, right? So how else would they have described the Grey?
Yeah, through their lens, you know.
Yeah.
If it's 5,000 or 10,000 years ago, that's the closest thing they can come to.
There you go. The ka-chink. You're exactly dead on, and there's your ant people.
Yeah.
So this is their connection to ancient aliens or even current Greys.
Yeah, but they have. Now, the Kachinas are the alien shapeshifters.
Uh-huh.
And I kind of that came to me one night meditating, and then I asked some people about that, and they kind of thought about it, and they go, you're probably right. Because the Kachinas have been around, you know, have been around for thousands of years, right?
Okay.
The carved Kachinas. And in fact, on my blog, you'll see several of the Kachinas on my blog. I've got three of them.
Well, are those like little tokens or like little dolls or something?
Yeah, and what they would
do. To ward off good or evil or.
There you go. And every. There's really only.
Amulets. That's the word.
There you go. There you go. Be a good way to describe it. And they're really only. There's different classifications of Kachinas. So they're not random. There's certain Kachinas that represent corn, harvest, watermelon, get my point, spirits, whatever.
Related to the earth, related to the culture, you know. That's really cool stuff because, you know, it just goes to show you how close the people were to the earth and they preserved that.
Yeah, and so what they were doing, and you know, it's interesting enough that the Hopis have a word in their vocabulary which you wouldn't think they have for shapeshifter.
Hmm. So why do they have that?
Well, because the Kachinas were shapeshifters.
Hmm.
In other words, if you study Hopi philosophies at all, you'll see right there. See, they you know, the swastika is actually Hopi.
Well, it's
believe it or not,
old too.
Well, a lot of people had it. But
it's an ancient symbol. There's no doubt about it. Probably goes all the way back to the cave.
Yeah, exactly. And a lot of people, the Hopi used it for, and that was their migration trails. Instead of going just north, south, east, west, you would have never filled in the areas in between. And so by making the lefts and the rights of the little 90s, right, then they would have filled in the areas. And they would. And now you've got Hopi hieroglyphs. I shouldn't call them hieroglyphs because they're petroglyphs, actually. You have Hopi petroglyphs all the way on the tip of South America. And then all the way up into Alaska. And you have them on the East Coast and the West Coast and everywhere. In fact,
it's probably safe to assume, and I'm sure the Hopi wouldn't be unhappy for me to say it, that they were maybe some of the first hunter-gatherers that came across over the straits, Bering Straits.
And they
kept pushing because that's the theory. They came down between those glaciers and then they pushed away all the way down south.
But if you talk to the Hopis, you do a little studying with the Hopis, it went the other direction.
Really?
Yeah. If you go to Hawaii, I lived in Hawaii for 4 years, but if you go to Hawaii and you talk to a Hawaiian, and you ask an Hawaiian, are they more connected to the Native Americans or to the Orientals, they'll jump up and down and say the Native Americans. And they'll tell you we don't have nothing in common with the Orientals. And if you think about the Hawaiian people and the headdresses, and you know, their sound is the same as the Native Americans. Their Native American chants and stuff are identical to the North Americans. And the Hopi talk about the three stepping stones in the Pacific. They didn't have the Pacific Ocean, right? But they had three stepping stones in the Great Ocean to the west.
Huh.
So the Hopis, in any good Hopi book you'll ever find, the Hopis talk about the migration, the back door to the north. And that would have been your migration to the north, just like you said, through the Bering Straits. And so, as we all know, we can't really trust any of our history. You know, as the old saying, them who control control the schools and the writings and everything like that, right? Well, they control history because people only taught with it. You know, it's the old line. You know, was it Mark Twain said, "I only know what I read in the newspaper"?
Here's a question from the chat room. What do the Hopi think about recent earthquakes or just earthquakes in general?
They have all that. All the things that are happening now. I just did a blog, and other people I think have posted. I posted on here before. There was like 9 prophecies that they had that would come true, and that's all in there. They have all that at the end, and then that goes. A lot of people have that. That goes back to Mother Earth getting upset with the people.
Hmm.
And it's almost biblical. You get my point? And so at the end times, you're going to have all that. But interesting, too, now, the Hopi, whatever you want to call it, if you want to call it Planet X, Nibiru, Wormwood, actually the Mayans call it the turtle. You've probably never heard that before, but it's the turtle. And the Hopis have the same item. It's called the Blue Star Kachina and then the Red Star Kachina. So they have another planetoid object coming back into our solar system. Is that the right word? Back into whatever you would call that we all rotate around the sun with?
Yeah, solar system.
Yeah, our solar system. There you go. And the Hopis have that too. And then when it comes, that'll be it. And what will happen is God will tell the ant people to save the good people. And it's really kind of interesting because they will tell the ant people to take the good people and put them back under the earth so the earth can be destroyed. It's kind of interesting how we all know about these dumb, deep underground military bases we're all hearing about now.
Right.
And yet the Hopi have this.
So how many prophecies did the Hopi have that did not come true?
All of them came true.
And so what are the...
Let's see if I can pull up... See if I can pull
well,
up.
Let me ask you a question.
I'll give you some examples. The Hopi had lines in the skies. Now you can either take that as chemtrails or you can take that as telephone wires. Either way, it's those lines in the skies. The Hopi said that there would be a strange beast would come that would look like the buffalo, but it would have long horns. Well, there was your cattle. The Hopi said there would be iron roads. Well, there's your railroads. The Hopi said there'll be another type of road that shines and glistens in the sky. And if you we all have, if you look at a paved road and a sunny day, how you get your reflection into the sky, right? Like the water coming up, or whatever you want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to remember these off the top of my head.
Well, the seas
would turn black. Well, that's our oil spills. I'm trying to pull these. There would be wheels that would come across. Wheels, when they were describing the wheels, well, that was the wagons of the white man coming east. They even had the hippies. And they had that the hippies would come visit them and try to learn their ways. Well, damn, what happened in the 60s and 70s? And especially now, and I'm an old hippie, man, and my generation really connected to the Native Americans. And I was an old protester during Nam, and I've always said that the original protests were quit killing our brothers in Vietnam and quit fucking with the Indians. And then the rest kind of came along later because everyone was kind of tired of the Indians getting messed with. Especially in our generation.
Well, yeah, definitely. Here's another question about the prophecies from Jess. Some websites say the prophecies say the world will go through a great change, more of a positive type of thing, change of thinking. Other sites say that the world will go through great destruction. So according to the Hopis, which way is it?
Here's what will happen to them. To them, we already been through the other three first worlds, and everybody went through that, and you had to go through that to get here. Okay? And so no matter if you were bad or good or whatever, you would have survived to get to this fourth world. But the fourth world will be the last chance
for people to awaken to the universal truths. So, and this time, if you don't make it, you're wiped out.
So what's the universal truth?
Well, in other words, not believing in the material world, get my point, taking care of your brother, you know.
Spiritual stuff?
Spiritual, yeah, being just the same thing the Mayans are actually talking about.
So you know, because, where are we in this fourth world? When does this fourth
world
end?
We're at the end.
When is the end?
And the great awakening to them. It's been said so many ways.
When's the end?
It's funny you should say that. My very, very first, one of my very first visits to the Hopi reservations, two of the spiritual leaders came to me, and they go, well, you know, the end is near. And it was interesting, and then I looked at them, and because I thought I had a leg up on stuff, right? It's before I knew anything about the Hopi. And I said, well, I thought I was here to tell you.
Hmm.
But they already, and like me or you and a lot of the people, we all sense that something ain't right.
Yeah, but that's been the way it's been forever.
Yeah. Maybe
so,
sped up now.
So how... do they have any kind of a date, like the Mayans?
No, because the Hopis don't have a calendar.
Ah.
And we'll link the Hopi and the Mayan now. Now, the Hopi and the Hopis talk about the Red City to the south. And the Hopis and the Mayans were interconnected. And if when you look up, and I kept telling people, when they finally let me take pictures, well, I already knew it was there. When they let me take a picture of the Mayan guy on old Arabi's petroglyphs, well, then you had the Mayan connection to the Hopi right there. But a lot of people, other historians, have been chasing that anyway, because the Hopi's belief system, you could read the Popol Vuh and you could read other Mayan stuff, and they're just intertwined. They're almost one and the same. It's just two different people's way of saying the same.
Well,
story.
I think a lot of times, and I'm sure you guys are going to agree with me, that the Mesoamericans didn't get a lot of credit. And I think that when you look back on that civilization, I think that that's probably true. I think they probably had vast trade networks that stretched all through
incredible.
United States.
And
the mounds and things like that.
Incredible.
I mean, they were trading. I mean, how else
you
would
you
explain
you.
That
you
there
bet.
Were
you
shells
bet.
And things that were native to like the Caribbean that were found in Illinois or other places? This stuff was
there. You go
long,
because
long,
it would have went
time.
From Illinois to maybe Oklahoma.
Right, and it was probably
and then
going
it,
on
there
for
would
thousands
trade it with
of years.
From New Mexico. Get my point?
Yeah,
and it would not like coming from Illinois would go all the way to Mesoamerica, but. Getting through the trade systems, you know, it would. And you're exactly right, because somebody said that I was on Godlike Production one night, and I do a post some stuff on there, and somebody said something about gold. And I said, well, a Hopi wouldn't know gold was valuable. Get my point? If he had a nugget of gold and you had a seashell that he could use to eat with, get my point, or used for jewelry, well, they had equal value. In other words, I have something you don't have, so I'll trade that for this.
Yeah, I think most people just don't give them enough credit for being sophisticated, and I also think there's a part of me that when, you know, the paleoarchaeologists or anthropologists or whatever start setting dates, I'm always thinking of the Clovis Point, you know, where they say,
right,
listen,
right, right. I'm familiar
here's
with that.
The bottom line. We don't care what anybody else says. Nobody could have come into North America any earlier than 14,000 years ago. And that thing, that ridiculous baseline, was intact for years and years until finally people got radiocarbon dating stuff that was down in Tierra del Fuego that was like 25,000 years old, you know. And I mean, they finally had to throw it out the window. But I've often thought that culture was far older than they gave it credit for. I don't know why, you know. Well, I guess maybe Western civilization felt that they had to somehow show that they were more superior, when in reality they may not have been.
Well, there you go. It's them that control the education.
Well, they write the history. It's not about that.
Yeah, I mean, they, you know, it's just part of the crap we learn going to school. That's, the older we get, we realize, damn, I waste a lot of time, especially now with the internet.
Amen, brother. So let's
talk about
the Mayan Popol Vuh, or the
Popol
Book of the...
And,
Popol Vuh.
You know, and you guys know, I took the Popol Vuh word for word. It took me like 6 months. And I went through every part of it, and I would write it down, and then I would show how it connected to the Hopi, or maybe the Cheyenne, get my point, or how it all connected. And the main thing I learned from doing how I, but if you just sit down and read a book, it's pretty hard to retain, especially the Popol Vuh, right? Because they're starting the creation of time. And then they take you right up to modern times, right? So if you just read it, it's hard to retain it. But boy, if you write it down, it starts making more sense. And so I just started saying, and it's really easy to see in the Popol Vuh, well, the aliens created us. And when I say that, because God didn't create us, the entities that God created created us. And they flat ass tell you in the Popol Vuh, they tell you that in the beginning, is that the creator created the creators, and then the creators to have, and whether you want to say to have something to do or something, created the earth, okay? And then they created the earth, and they created the plants. And then they go, it'd be no different than you and me. And after they created the plants, they thought, man, it'd be neat to have animals. So then they created the animals, okay? And then the animals are neat, but they chirped and made noise and stuff like that. But the animals never praised them for what they created them, right? And so they go, then they go, well, we'll make our first attempt at mankind. So, and the Hopi have the same story, and they created Mudman.
What's that?
And that was the first human beings on Earth. But the problem with Mudman, and they use it metaphorically, that the problem with Mudman was is he didn't hold up in the rain. and Mudman didn't say his prayers, okay? And then they made Stickman. Well, Stickman didn't say his prayers either and all that, right? So they just tell you in the Popol Vuh, we just wiped his ass out. I mean, we created, you're not even saying a prayer to us, you're not even praising us.
Boy,
just,
I guess my faith's coming.
Going.
Because then
and
they
now,
created Doug Man, and he don't pray whatsoever.
There you go. There you go. And there you go.
I'm
and
screwed.
Doug don't pray no more. So I'm just going to wipe you out. And that's why we're at the end here, because we have lost our ability to pray and thank God for our creation, our water, our food, and all of our stuff.
Yeah, well, and that, is that according to the legend? I mean, is that, because, you know, that's
pure.
Certainly
that's
not
right in the Popol Vuh, and that is pure hope.
But that's not true of people. Many people are very spiritual and are very...
Yeah, I know, and that's what they're, and then there it goes back, and the good people will be saved. Get my point? Because God would not ever, God never did ever before wipe out all the creations. You see what I'm saying? And but the good people, and this time the good people will be saved. But the Popol Vuh can just be brutal sometimes, and they just say that it just didn't work out. We created you, we gave you, and even in the Popol Vuh they tell you that they made us equal to the gods. But what happened is they made us so equal to them, they didn't want us competing with them. And it's interesting, they tell you in the Popol Vuh, then they dumbed down mankind.
Well, that could be true.
I'm just quoting the Popol Vuh, okay?
Right. Well, you know, it's interesting because the one common thread that I've been thinking through this entire interview for the last 40 minutes has been, wow. You know, is that where Christianity got their stuff or vice versa or, you know, together? Because it's, you know, it's all the same stuff. Basically, you worship some deity, and if you don't, you're screwed. We're going to, you know, the world's going to end. We're all dead. We're all going to die if we live long enough and all that other BS. And
right.
it's rather interesting because...
Well, it is because it was all because everybody started from one.
Well, and the other thing that's interesting about it is that if you look at the Bible, you know, the God of the Old Testament or the Hebrew Scriptures is unbelievably dysfunctional and human-like dysfunctional. And right. From what you're talking about, it's like, okay, so they created us, and they created us too good. You know, I mean, are they stupid? They created the animals that couldn't pray. Well, why don't you give them that ability, you dumbasses? And then so they create the humans, and we're too good, so they have to dumb us down. That all falls right into line with essentially with the ancient astronaut or ancient alien hypothesis that, you know.
And you're right about that. And they were kind of, you know, it's interesting, and the Pope of Bonn will tell you that they couldn't create man. They created mud man. They failed at it, right? They created stick man. They failed at it. They finally had to go to God. But God didn't do it, but God sent the oldest grandparents, okay? You can take that any way you want to. It was probably the souls from the very first families. And then the eldest grandparents helped them finally create us. And then they perfected us and then just perfected us too much.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's actually pretty close to Zechariah Sitchin's stuff, you know, that the Anunnaki, you know, basically created us or crossbred us and genetically made us and made us too good, you know, so
to be slaves.
Yeah, to be slaves. And they, in essence, you know, turned off that gene that allows humans to live a long time or whatever.
There's a really beautiful Native American story about that very same thing, that the first humans lived forever. And then somebody realized one day, damn, there's too many of us.
Mm-hmm.
And then they scaled that down. Well, they knew they lived forever. You get my point? But we're talking about walking around on the earth. And then they gave them a time light. Now, I think it's even, isn't that even biblical? I'm not a real biblical scholar, so I can't.
Good for you.
But
yeah, it's all biblical. It's all the same thing, only different.
Yeah, well, it is. Because, like I said before, it all had to come from one thought anyway. It all started with, if you go back to Adam and Eve. And you can't find a culture that doesn't have Adam and Eve in one form or another.
Because it was for each culture.
Yeah, there you go.
They had their paradise. Sometimes I wonder if paradise ended when we came down out of the trees and decided to go out into the savannah. You know?
You want to know when the Hopis think paradise ended?
When?
You probably, nobody's going to want to hear this out here. Is when man started eating the animals.
Well, exactly. When you come down to the trees, you're not fruit eaters anymore.
There you go. And I'll tell you how
easy it was for us. I mean, life had its challenges, but probably if we were arboreal creatures like we used to be millions of years ago, just fruit was plentiful, space was plentiful, you know, there was lots of food, and until maybe one day it got dry or they had a drought and they were forced to go to the savannah.
This is a pure Hopi story, how the first world ended. And I love this story. Well, what it was in the first world, they were still connected to God. Get my point? God was, as I like to say, was still fresh in their minds. Okay? He wasn't so removed like we have now, you know? So in the very first Hopi, and if you read Genesis, it's the same, Genesis 1:29 is the same basic story. So, and God said to the Hopis, I have given you the plants, right?
Mm-hmm.
I've given you the seeds, the fruits, everything you need to eat. And you are to live at peace with the animals. And so what happened was the animals and the Hopis could stand next to each other, okay? Because the animal had no fear of the Hopi, and the Hopi had no fear of the animal, okay? So they lived in hand. Well, what happened is time went on, the Hopi got lazy. So, and God said that you cannot make anything grow without a prayer.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so when you plant your maize, your squash, your beans, right, they taught them their prayers, right? So what happened was they just got lazy, just like we are right now. And I call it, we're at a level of decadence is what I invented the term for it. So they get indecent. So they get lazy. They quit saying their prayers. They quit planting their stuff. Quit taking care of the harvest. It came wintertime. Guess what? They're hungry. So the animals had no fear of them, right? So they could walk up to an animal and club him. And then that's how the first world ended. God came down and wiped out all the Hopi from the first world. It says, I told you, you were to live at peace with the animals. Now, if you look in Genesis, it tells you right there, you will eat the nuts and the fruits and the vegetables. Just read Genesis 1:29. It's right there. And you will be a shepherd over the animals. It's right there. And isn't that interesting? The Bible
God gave Adam and Eve, Adam dominion over all creatures.
Right, and to me, and this is just my own opinion, that when
it's
Eve,
good when God is on your side.
Yeah, he'll be on your side as long as you're doing as you're instructed, basically.
Yep. So you're basically enslaved. I mean, it's
good to be the king of the universe.
Yeah. Well, you're enslaved to eternity.
Well, you're enslaved to a more advanced species.
Right. Yeah. That'll offer you eternity. Is what I meant by that.
Right. So it's
play the game fair.
It's basically emotional blackmail. You know, if you don't do this,
right. You can put it that way. Yeah. It is.
The same thing as the Bible. You know. There are many different interpretations about 2012. In fact, next week we have somebody coming on talking about that. According to the Maya, in your interpretation, you know, 2012, is that basically a spiritual change?
Well,
a destructive change?
Have you guys, he just died last week, and he wrote the book, The Mayan Factor. Jose, if you look up the term, the book Mayan Factor, you'll see his name. He just died last week, and he's the one who started the harmonic emergence. Is that what they were, where the people would all get together? They did it down in Mesoamerica and they did a bunch of other places. He is the one that invented the term 2012. We never heard the term 2012 until just recently. In fact, when he put it in his book, he discovered it through some petroglyphs. No, his would have been hieroglyphs. And that date came up. We never heard of that date until then. So now that date has come up because all they ever talked about was the sudden change. And I don't think it says anywhere. Of course, the Hopi say there'll be destruction. But I don't know, do the Mayans really say? I don't. And in the Popol Vuh, they never mention 2012.
Hmm.
They never mention a destruction of the earth.
Hmm.
But in the same token, the very last paragraph in the Popol Vuh says, and it basically says, here we are at Santa Cruz again. In other words, man is doomed to repeat. You get my point?
Keep going.
So it's saying everything has been completed. Here's concerning, and the Mayans, by the way, were the Quiche people, okay? So so here's the last little sentence. So everything has been completed here concerning Quiche, or the Mayan people, which is now named Santa Cruz. In other words, here we are, we've done all this stuff, and here we are, we've made the same mistakes.
Well, yeah.
Huh?
Yeah, I mean, human beings are going to do that, and as they evolve, they're going to repeat some of the same mistakes. But, you know, we are getting better, little by little.
Well, you know, some of us.
Yeah, the human race in general is evolving, slow as it may seem, but you know we are. I mean, I see too many great people with great objectives in trying to raise the vibrational level and help others, you know, with self-sacrifice and just being that way. And so I'm encouraged by what I'm seeing. Hey, we only have a few minutes left, so one other thing I wanted to ask you about was the tales of the Hopi or the Mayans or whoever, as it relates to the hollow earth hypothesis.
Well, all Native American tribes in the Southwest, and it's only because I only know from studying the tribes of the Southwest, all say they came from inside the earth.
So with the ant people.
There you go.
Okay.
There you go. And my YouTube videos, I've got three different. I recorded the Hopi emergence story. I recorded the Zuni emergence story, and I've recorded the Navajo emergence story. And every one of them talks about how mankind came from inside the earth. So there's your hollow earth. And if you study the Mayans a little bit, the Mayans talk about every Mayan temple, pyramid temples, are built over massive underground vaults. Because in the Mayans talk about all the passageways, the watery passageways inside the earth.
So one of the things that's always kind of interested me about the Mayans, and certainly feel free to correct me if I'm wrong, is that I was under the impression that when the Spaniards came here, they destroyed almost all of their codexes. So the way of deciphering timelines and how it corresponds to what's happening in Europe and what's happening now really were difficult to kind of pinpoint because of the way that each calendar was set up completely differently, how each culture viewed it. And so I do know that one of the codexes was saved because I think when the Catholic it went over to Germany, but it was really a fragment. Thank goodness that one of those missionaries, you know, had the foresight to save that codex. But my point is that to me, and I mean no offense to anybody, is that some of that information is questionable to me because I'm just not sure about what's being lost in the translation. I guess that's my point.
Well, and this is pretty, and this has got to be obvious, is that all that stuff sitting underneath in Rome, they didn't destroy that stuff. That stuff was taken back to Rome. It's sitting in vaults, sitting underneath the Pope. What do they call that?
Okay, so you're saying like in the Vatican Library, the codex.
There you go. They didn't destroy that. They took it. They know it. And another problem is that you got to remember once you start studying the Mayans, when Cortez arrived on one reed, and the Mayans knew he was going to arrive on one reed. Well, he didn't conquer the Mayans. The Mayans were passive people. They had already left Dodge, and he conquered the Aztecs.
Right. That's right.
That's a bunch of crap when people say, he conquered. He didn't conquer the Mayans. The Mayans left.
Right.
They knew on one read that Cortez was arrived.
What do you think, it seems to me like some of the anthropologists archaeologists say that the Mayan kingdom collapsed because of, like, a couple factors. One was consistent warfare, that they never united, which strikes me as strange, or maybe it all broke down, I don't know. And that the other thing was, too, that their farming culture was completely decimated by droughts and other such things so that they couldn't support the cities. And as a result, that's what threw them into decline.
Well,
how does the whole
I don't buy that. I just think that that happened to the Aztecs and them.
Uh-huh.
And the Mayan people aren't the greatest people in the world, because I know we're running out of time, but I want to say a quick little story. Quetzalcoatl was the Mayan god, you know, the great plumed serpent, right? The Mayan people god. And the story says that in the end, Quetzalcoatl got on we'll call it a canoe, right? And sailed off to the east, right?
Yeah.
But he gave the Mayans had the greatest lifestyle. They compare it to living in the Americas in the 50s, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, my parents got a new car every couple of years. You know what I'm saying? And only my dad. Where everybody lived well. You get my point? And everything was beautiful. And they compare the Mayan civilization when Quetzalcoatl was around to it, right? But Quasi said in the end, he says, I couldn't keep them off each other. And what he meant by that was he gave them too much time off. So everybody was having sex with everybody, and the family was breaking down.
Here's a question from the chat room. Do the Hopis have any stories of Jesus visiting them like some other Native Americans?
Oh, and that's a really classic story there. This guy was, we all have heard of the famous Chiricahua Cochise. And here's what, when the Catholics tried to convert all those people, his line was, Jesus never visited my Hogan.
That's my house, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. So you're telling me I'm going to hell, but the cat never visited my Hogan.
Yeah.
And that was a way of putting, how can you Christians come say, well, we're all going to hell. We don't even know who you're talking about. He didn't come over here.
So let's tell us about your website. You wanna...
Well, it's my blog, rd47blog at blogspot.com, and my YouTube channel. I'd write a book, but I do a blog every week. And right now I'm picking out every tribe. I just finished all the tribes in Arizona. And then last week I wrote about the Crow, and I'm picking out the larger tribes, and I'm writing about them every week. And I do a short, brief history in my blogs. You can probably read them in 5 to 10 minutes. They're called microblogs. And Blogspot isn't separating my paragraphs, but I don't know what happened with Blogspot.
So can people contact you through your blog?
Yeah, they can. Yeah, and another thing, if anybody wants to know anything about me, is all they have to go to Google, and then I am famous anymore. And if you just put RD47 or you just put RD47 blog, there will be page after page. All my quotes are, if I make a quote, it's really gotten funny. If I make a quote on YouTube, it shows up on there. If I make a quote, if I make a comment on Blog Talk Radio on Godlike Production, it'll show up there. So all that stuff and that. A friend of mine, one of my good friends, is a computer science professor at ASU. And I went to him and I said, how come there's so much stuff about me? There's 7 billion people, right? And he says, there's a ranking. Get my point? And so my stuff is just up there. So,
and
what it'll do is it'll lead you to other stuff.
All right, so we're running out of time.
Wow, what a pleasure it's been to have you on the show tonight, Ron.
Yeah, and you guys are welcome.
Yeah.
Anytime.
Yeah, thanks. And interesting stuff. And speaking of the whole 2012 thing, next week John Venter will come on. Should we worry about 2012? He's got a book on that, so we'll see what
Why don't you guys move your show back an hour so you don't wipe out the West Coast?
Yeah, it's a hard one. But
you're 5 o'clock our time now, so you're chopping off the whole West Coast.
Dinner time for folks.
Dinner time. We're still on the freeway trying to get home.
Yeah.
That's why God created archives. So anyway, we do appreciate our live listeners, those in the chat room, those in the Inception Radio Network chat room. We appreciate those who are listening to the archive. Please visit us at paranexus.org. And Ron, thanks so much for joining us tonight.
Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Good night.
All right, bye-bye.
Good night.
All right, folks, another episode just about finished. We appreciate your support, and we'll look forward to seeing everybody again next week. That's all I got, Grant.
Yeah, I was just going to say, don't forget, folks, that if you have a topic you want us to talk about or you want to be a guest on the show, we're very accessible. So please, send us some of your ideas or thoughts about what you might like to hear. We'll be happy to accommodate you if we can.
Sounds good. All right, folks, that's a wrap. Great week. See you next Wednesday. Good night.
Bye, everybody.